You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Social networking has once again pushed the limits of the internet with the untimely demise of Michael Jackson, who passed away last Friday, aged 50.
It's close to midnight, something evil's lurking in the dark.
Celebrations, vigils, and synchronized moonwalks are all being coordinated online. Sales of his music on Amazon and iTunes are soaring, according to the Times Media Dakota blog. Twitter is still popular with the emotional outpourings of grief and messages commemorating Michael Jackson's music and legacy. Mr. Jackson's death is also prompting some people to ask the question about the life and history of the late singer. Mobile search service KGB, which employs human beings to answer text queries, has been flooded with questions about Mr. Jackson. So did your internet connection seem slow early Friday morning? Traffic to news websites globally spiked, clocking in at one point at 4.2 million visitors per minute. Some entertainment news websites, including eonline.com, perezhilton.com, appeared to load more slowly than normal. Sometimes they did not even load at all, according to some observations during the hours immediately after the singer's demise. A Google spokesman said even Google had trouble keeping up. In California, between 5:40 and 6:15 p.m. Eastern, after TMZ.com had said Mr. Jackson had died, some visitors to Google News experienced difficulty accessing search results for queries related to Michael Jackson. Twitter, the microblogging site, went into meltdown, with Jackson fans around the world using the social networking site to express their grief. Twitter said it had disabled the search field on users' homepages entirely, although it did not explain why. The troubles don't bode well for Twitter's prospects as a real-time search engine, which many believe is likely the service's most valuable feature. The top five trending topics globally for the 48 hours after the death were Jackson-related, pushing discussions of the bloodshed in Iran off the radar.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
The iPhone 3GS hits the streets this week and Adam Turner puts it through its hoops, but will he upgrade? We take a look at the role of the internet in times of major breaking news. Telstra bill shock for broadband users is back in the news again. Australian pricing for Windows 7 has been released this week, and $4 million later, the federal government's foray into monitoring grocery prices, the Grocery Choice website, has been dumped after supermarkets refused to supply any information. First up, though, let's find out what's been making news this week in the world of technology.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, web filters to censor video games, New South Wales police images to go digital, Jackson queries cause Google meltdown, and the UK Ministry of Defence moves to block WikiLeaks. This is Tech Talk News. Microsoft has finally spilt the beans on the Australian pricing for Windows 7, and there's good news for those who don't want to wait until October to buy a new PC. Retail prices for Windows 7 in Australia will be broadly similar to those charged for Vista. Home Premium will be $299, Professional will be $449, and Ultimate at $469. Upgrade prices will be $199, $399, and $429 respectively. In an apparent attempt to avoid customers delaying new PC purchases until Windows 7 ships on October the 22nd, Microsoft has announced that the Windows 7 upgrade option will be offered in Australia starting as of now. Microsoft Australia said buyers of new PCs shipping with Windows Home Premium, Business or Ultimate will be able to upgrade to Windows 7 for little or no cost when it launches on October 22nd this year. One of the first companies to announce its participation in the Windows 7 upgrade option is Hewlett-Packard. Eligible consumers will receive the Windows 7 upgrade, an upgrade utility disk and an instruction guide sometime after the launch date. The Australian federal government has now set its sights on gamers, promising to use its internet censorship regime to block websites hosting and selling video games that are not suitable for 15-year-olds. Separately, the Communications Minister, Stephen Conroy, has been nominated by the British ISP industry for its annual Internet Villain Award, competing alongside the European Parliament and the French President, Nicolas Sarkozy. Australia is the only developed country without an R18 plus classification for games, meaning any titles that do not meet the MA15 plus standard, such as those with excessive violence or sexual content, are simply banned from sale by the classification board unless they're modified to remove the offending content. So far, this has only applied to local bricks and mortar stores selling physical copies of games, but a spokesman for Senator Conroy confirmed that under the filtering plan, it will be extended to downloadable games, flash-based web games and sites which sell physical copies of games that do not meet the MA15 plus standard. This means that even Australians who are aged 15 and over who want to obtain the adult-level games online will be unable to do so. It will undoubtedly raise the ire of gamers, the average age of which is 30 in Australia, according to research commissioned by the Interactive Entertainment Association of Australia. New South Wales Police will be one of the first organisations in the force to implement a secure digital imagery system. It aims to manage more than 1 million digital photos and pieces of video footage taken by officers and collected by the public. The system will be provided by Unisys, which won the $6 million deal as part of a 3-year contract. The Shared Imagery Management System, otherwise known as SIMS, can securely categorise, archive, search and distribute images that have either been taken by police officers at crime scenes or have come from the public in a central repository. Images will be stored on two separate systems. Original copies of the photographs and footage will be saved in a digital vault, and there'll be another working copy of the images. SIMS will have the ability to track what happens to the image at every stage. And it means that police will now be able to use digital images, closed-circuit TV and mobile phone footage as reliable evidence in court. In a statement from Google on Friday, a deluge of search queries for Michael Jackson led Google News, the news aggregator of the web search engine, to initially believe it was under attack. Google, in a blog post on the company's website last Friday, said that millions and millions of people around the world began searching for news about the pop star on Thursday as reports emerged about his hospitalization and death. It rated the hotness of the Jackson-related searches as volcanic. Google said the spike in searches related to Michael Jackson was so big that Google News initially mistook it for an automated attack, and as a result, for about 25 minutes, when some people searched Google News, they saw a We're Sorry page before finding the article they were looking for. The We're Sorry page tells users their query looks similar to an automated request from a computer virus or spyware application and forces them to type in a series of squiggly characters before it will process their request. Popular microblogging service Twitter also suffered a slowdown in performance last Friday as users exchanged thousands of messages per minute about Jackson's death at the age of 50. Web portal AOL said its AIM instant messaging service was down also for about 40 minutes. Yahoo said the news area on its front page received 5 times its normal traffic, and its front page story, Michael Jackson Rushed to Hospital, was its highest click story ever, with 800,000 clicks within 10 minutes. And finally today, the British Ministry of Defence is rushing to block access from its computers to WikiLeaks, a notorious document leaking site. According to the UK Guardian newspaper, the British Ministry of Defence was forced to act after it discovered that individuals and dissident groups were using the site to publish sensitive information, including manuals used by troops currently serving in Iraq. One internal email read, "There are thousands of things on here. I literally mean thousands, not just UK Ministry of Defence, but other places as well. v3.co.uk searched WikiLeaks and found a number of documents from the Ministry of Defence, with most being introduced with the warning stating, "This document is issued for the information of such persons who need to know its contents in the course of their official duties. Any person finding this document should hand it to a British Forces unit or to a British police station for its safe return to the Ministry of Defence." Articles ranged from the 1947 Penny Report on Atomic Weapons to a Desert Operations Field Manual from 2003. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Australia, almost a top 10 broadband user.
Yes. Mr. Conroy will be happy with that announcement.
A bit like your mobile
Hello,
phone
Microsoft,
now.
You're listening? Here's a good idea for you.
Optus have gone the other way. They're actually going to charge an ongoing cost of $10 a month.
God, there's manufacturers. What's wrong with them?
I was really surprised.
ABC3 has had $67 million thrown at it. And let's call it for us, JD, I'll be very happy because it'll be the electronic babysitter big time.
You can go and tell it which network you're on, and it will auto-tether for you.
That's critical with your mobile broadband, of course.
So, I mean, the end of AM and FM radio, as
no,
we know it.
No, it's not going...
Not enough Australian content will make him a television program.
I'm sorry?
Yes.
Oh, retinal yourself.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Thank goodness.
Sorry, I have pig flu.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. And the panel this evening consists of the very willing, very capable, very able. I can't think of any more superlatives than that, gentlemen. Dr. Graham and Dr. JD, with Dr. Ron being noticeably absent.
We kept his chair
there.
Here.
The chair's there.
If you're looking on Ustream, you'll see his headphones there waiting for him.
If we'd thought a little bit quicker out of the box, we could have actually put a little piece of paper there and, you know, a little stick and mouth sort of thing. Someone could have done an impersonation. No, he had a better offer this evening. Unfortunately, he won't be with us. Oh, you never know your luck in a big city. He might call in, might come up on the chat very shortly, but he has been delayed. Anyway, welcome. If you're listening to us in New Zealand live on the stream, hello to you up there in the North Island, wherever you might be listening to us around the country. At the moment, I've got some news, gentlemen.
Have you?
You know, Lydia Davis, she's our regular cohort. She's coming to Australia.
Woo-hoo. She's normally in Silicon Valley, in the heart of where everything happens.
Yeah, where all the best silicon is. And unfortunately, she's going to be unfortunately, she's leaving. She's leaving the Silicon Trail, coming over here to Australia. And she will be live in the studio here on July the 13th, which I think is about two more podcasts away, or two more broadcasts away, or however you're counting it. So we get a first-hand... first-hand view of what life's like back in Australia when she comes back here. Has things changed in the 3.5 to 4 years that she's been out of the country? We've got better broadband now than the US has, allegedly, according to reports last week.
Right.
If you believe everything you hear on Tech Talk Radio.
Well, that fits with what Lydia herself has reported over the time when she was struggling to get it set up.
It does, actually. And, even emails that she's been cursing technological carriers. I think she's found someone worse than our incumbent, and that's their incumbent.
Oh, no.
So she was trying to, I think, doing something for Adam, of all things. And anyway, there's another story. Mm. What's the week been like? Apart from the obvious, it's been a very slow tech week because I think it's been gazumped by some singer's demise.
Mm. Who was that?
Yeah, him. Mm. Anyway, there was an iPhone came out this week.
There was.
That happened. But other than that, it's been relatively slow. There's been some interesting developments in a few other areas, but nothing NBN-ish that's gazumping anything else or anything like that. So, yeah. Anyway, we'll be talking about the iPhone later because there's concerns.
Is there?
There is concerns. Just today, things are getting a bit hot for the old iPhone.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
and the backplate, a white one in particular.
There you go. But whilst I was trolling around on the internet this evening, I came up with some... Because, it's a slow news week. I came up with other people that are trying to feel the same thing because it's a slow news week. IT News came up with 5 things your CPU can do when it's idle.
Oh, I saw that, yes. That's great.
And I thought that was really cool. Whether you're in a meeting or at lunch or thinking there's no reason to let an idle CPU go to waste. Now, there's the obvious one, which everyone's probably heard of, which is the number one, which is SETI at home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what that is, it's the hosted by Space Sciences Laboratory at the University of California in Berkeley. And it's, dedicated to the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. Just give them a slice of your processor and they can do a few calculations. I don't know what they do.
What they do is they analyze data from a radio telescope looking for signals that are not naturally occurring. So
okay, have you done this?
Yeah, you filter.
What the, port are they on? Port? I don't know. Sorry.
The software just analyzes the raw data from this radio telescope, and looks for signals that don't fit the natural pattern. So if you find a significant signal, it reports it for further analysis.
So if you've done this, Graham, does it take a lot of bandwidth? So, I mean, the processor power is fine because you're paying for the electricity, I guess. But if it's using your bandwidth as well, that'd be a bit of a problem.
No, it uses very, very little bandwidth because it's very processor intensive, but there's not a lot of data involved.
Right.
So it'll download a block of data, spend a day or so analysing it, depending on how fast you are. It might be a lot less than that these days with fast processors. Back when I used to do it a few years ago, it was a day or so analysing a block of data and upload it back up again and get a new one.
Oh, very good.
It's good use of sort of processor. You go into your processor, alt task or whatever it is on the PC, in the task manager there, and your processor's doing nothing most of the time. It's waiting for you.
Yeah, that's right.
Us humans, we're very slow when it comes to those sort of things. So,
And I particularly run it on servers that sit there doing nothing for a lot of their time. So,
do you?
Yeah, not overnight. So much on my own PCs. Yeah.
You should have got a Windows 2008 server. It spends most of its life updating itself.
Thank you, WSH. Yes, dear, all right.
Absolutely. We'll talk about that very shortly, too.
Actually, my machine is saying it's only using 32% at the moment, and it's doing the video podcasts.
Oh, very good.
There you go.
So there you go. You've got 64-odd% that you can lend a little bit of headroom there that you can donate. Anyway, here's some more suggestions that IT News came up with today. The number five suggestion was IBM's World Community Grid with 460,000 members running more than 1.3 million devices. The World Community Grid is a project that benefits humanity. IBM's project is a flexible infrastructure between research projects and volunteers, and it's been going since 2004. It's researching things such as anti-HIV drugs and studying cancer, as well as developing solar cells. It runs in Berkeley as well. Yep. Berkeley's a big drain on our unused processor. We've got the SETI thing happening there, and that was number five. Number four, climateprediction.net. These guys, they study climate models to investigate how they are affecting the changes in carbon dioxide levels and sulfur cycle throughout the planet.
So you're helping monitor the greenhouse effect.
Yeah. This is done in Oxford University and has 31,000 users contributing 70 teraflops of processing power. What's a teraflop? How many flops in a... Well, that's... Well, we know teras, well, but...
A gigaflop was the definition for a supercomputer, wasn't it?
So, yeah, something like that.
Mm.
Back in the good old days. Anyway, so that was number four. Number three, yep. I had to chuckle. This is what made me think I've got to read this out tonight.
A flop, by the way, is a floating point operation per second. So it's a significant mathematical calculation per second.
Say that again. A flop is a floating
point operation per second.
Okay, good. Well, the acronyms are good. I like to know it. I didn't know that. See, I've learned something on the show tonight already.
Yeah. Floating point means it's a calculation involving a number that can have a decimal component.
What, a non-integer?
A non-integer, yeah.
Okay.
Unless you're a first-generation Pentium processor, of course.
Yes. 99.99999% of the time, yes.
Number three, which was the reason behind my inkling of reading this out tonight, was electric sheep. I thought anything with electric sheep in it has to be read out.
What do electric sheep do, Andrew?
Well, it was named after Philip K. Dick's novel, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Open source screensaver Electric Sheep highlights the softer side of technology. The program was founded by software artist Scott Draves in 1999 and aims to illustrate the product of people and computers is greater than what a single contributor could achieve.
Right.
So it runs on 62,000 desktops as a screensaver. That's a pretty savage screensaver.
Mm.
But that was Electric Sheep. I thought, I've got to read that one out. And number two was Folding at Home. Stanford University's Folding at Home studies protein folder related to Alzheimer's, Huntington's, Parkinson's diseases, and cancers. It was started in October 2000 and has over 350,000 donor CPUs on Windows, Linux, Mac, and of all things, PlayStation 3.
Right.
So you can hook your PlayStation 3 up and let them use that too.
Mm.
Don't know what it plays. Any ideas? So, and of course, obviously, the number one, which we read out first, was the SETI at home. That's been going for ages, hasn't it? Since 1999. Have they found anything?
Very long time. Don't think they've actually found. I think we would have had it first item on the news if they'd actually found little green men talking to us. But
yeah.
I think there's been a few interesting signals have been followed up from it. But
not they're going to tell us.
They've learned anything.
You know what? Microsoft could get involved in this. They could give extra CPU time for Vista users. Or do they need RAM?
Do Vista users have any spare CPU time available?
No, but if someone's got a few to spare, that could always be put to good use, I would have thought.
Possibly.
Now, what did you think about the Windows pricing shenanigans that came out this week?
Well, yeah, the pricing in the US looks good.
Does it? Yeah, good. At this point in time, I would like to point out that the opinions are those of us, not of anybody else. Look, I must admit, I was a little disappointed when Windows came out with the pricing that they did, because there's not really that much... Like, after what they put people with Vista through, you would have thought that potentially they might have done the right thing, but it's about 8% retail less than what Vista was, and the upgrades are about $50 less off the full retail price of an upgrade. So if you're on Vista and you want to upgrade... I think I think the top of the line run was, I don't have the number in front of me, but it was about $480, and you only get it for $430, and that's for the full whack version. So I must admit, I was a little disappointed in that, considering the Vista history.
Yes, you'd think you'd get a little bit more than that as a discount as a Vista user, wouldn't you?
Well, Adam's suggesting you should get it for free, and I don't disagree with him.
No, exactly right. If you're a Vista user and you've been put through that, I would have thought you would have got much better offer than what they're actually... purporting to offer. But anyway, that's Microsoft for you, and or consumers, as you have the right to do, vote with your wallet. If you don't want to, go and do what Adam's done. Turn to the Mac side of things, or even better, go to Ubuntu.
Ubuntu, yeah.
Yeah, there's something in the news about Ubuntu tonight too.
Is there?
Now, things for free. We all like things for free, don't we?
Yeah. We do.
If you're a customer of Three Mobile's broadband, well, apparently you can get some security software for free.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, says he. Sounds sounding very sceptical there, Dr. Graham. mobile broadband customers, which are Hutchison 3s, are being offered a free 12-month subscription to the premium AVG Internet Security Suite. And Telco joins financial institutions...
Hang on a minute. The AVG free upgrade.
AVG Internet Security. Well, I'm not an AVG user.
AVG is the free one.
Well, this is the premium. Or maybe the premium's not free.
That's the paid one.
Yeah, that's the paid one.
So this is the paid version of the one you can get for free anyway.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Is there any difference? Because I'm not a user.
Thanks, three. Yep, good.
But anyway,
I'll check it out.
Support is the difference.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, is that the only difference? So there's no functional difference?
Oh, there possibly is. I didn't really pay too much attention when I installed it the other day.
So you get to ring someone in Mumbai when you've got an issue with your antivirus. Well, that could be interesting. Not that I have anything against that, but it's just, that's where Three do their call center bases and things like that. So, and potentially, yeah. Anything nasty out there at the moment, Graham, that you've come across in the last little bit? Or is it all, we'll get a lot of Michael Jackson ones coming in shortly. I reckon that's on the cards.
Well, I'm sure those news-based phishing emails will obviously go in that direction. We'll get a lot of those. But no, I haven't noticed anything particularly popping up in the last little while.
Oh, good. Oh, there you go. Adam's saying on the chat...
I have a lot of protection on my servers for that sort of thing, though, so I don't tend to see them.
Yes. Adam's saying on our chat at the moment that AVG have people in Melbourne. So there you go. You might be able to get some assistance, should you require it, from this country, which is terrific. All four call centres in this country. All right. Now, the other thing I was going to talk about before we get too further down the track too is the internet was nearly broken during the course of Friday, Australian time, or late Thursday afternoon in the Pacific time. It took a bit of a whack with all this traffic. Do you think there's a finite level of before things grind to a rapid halt on the internet?
Well, I'm sure there is.
Because I don't think it comes much bigger than that with everyone jumping on the line like, oh my God, what happened?
Yeah, and that's the time where... It's not, I think, that the entire internet is affected. I think that not only does everybody in that situation go to the web to try and find out what's happened, but they all start in the same place.
Where were you when you first heard about it? Do you recall? Did you find out about it online, or did you hear about it offline?
I think I was driving around listening to the radio in the car.
Okay.
I found out about it, and I didn't rush to a computer to look it up because I said...
No, I didn't think you would.
I didn't rush to a computer, but I was trying to use Twitter at the time and couldn't find the server.
Oh, yes.
Couldn't find the server at all.
No.
That much traffic,
Twitter copped a big whack, and they took off the search facilities or something like that.
Yep, and that's exactly the thing. That's what people are going to do. People are going to rush to the news pages, CNN, Google News. In this country, they'll go to abc.net.au. They'll rush to their social networking pages because they want to have their say about what's going on. And those are the places they're going to take the big hits.
I reckon the abc.com would probably survive, though. But the others.
Well, that's a play center. So yeah, chances are they wouldn't be looking on a play center for Michael Jackson. They'd be looking at ABC.net.
which is a broadcaster.
ABC.
My apologies.
Let's clarify that even further. ABC.net.au is the Australian broadcaster.
Absolutely.
ABC.com will be the American broadcasting company in America.
Well, there you go.
And they would have had a lot of stuff on their news. Yeah.
Well, the biggest sites to take a walloping were Facebook, Twitter, and MySpace in the social networking side of things.
Yeah, well, that figures. Because what's the first thing everyone's going to do? They're going to want to put the Michael Jackson music on their homepage, on their MySpace, and they're going to want to have their say about it. They're going to want to say, oh, I was in the front row when I saw Michael Jackson, or I learned to moonwalk when I was 12 months old or something.
Well, that's what they're doing online. They're organising all these, you know, functions, and I think there's concerts going to happen around the world in honour of the man. So, but also the other thing, which I thought was quite interesting, Michael Jackson, aside of his music and all of his other interesting things, was a bit of a techno junkie himself. He had quite an interest in cameras, video, and hence the reason for a lot of his film clips were very much cutting edge and molded a lot of, I guess, where we went from film to video, because his clips were true film clips. And a lot of them, apart from the fact that you saw Thriller, I think, on television, on Countdown back in those days, and they were traditional film clips, I think a lot of cinemas played them too when it first came out. So you could see it up on the big, big, big screen.
Interesting.
But now he was right in the forefront of technology. He took an interest in cameras. I know because I've been in the industry a little bit, I'm aware that Molly Meldrum had a good relationship with Michael Jackson, and quite often they would talk about, you know, the setting up of cameras and sound and stuff like that when he was doing interviews and things like that. So he probably had an iPod or two too, I would imagine.
You'd think that would be fairly likely, wouldn't
Absolutely.
You?
So anyway, there you go, and that was a huge demand on the internet resources.
Yeah, absolutely.
Things slowed to an absolute crawl. I remember I was trying to upload stuff to the United States from work, and I was going, oh my goodness, look at the speeds on this. It was like back in the good old dial-up days. So anyway, hopefully we're over that. But I think we'll have a few more interesting scenarios when it comes to and who else was it? Farrah Fawcett. She, Charlie's Angel, she passed away on the same day as well.
Yep.
So that would have compounded issues in the United States.
Almost completely, totally swamped.
Yeah, I know. They could have dropped. Pete Costello could have had, you know, another email scandal on that day and no one would have noticed. Potentially his email wouldn't have got through, but anyway. And that leads on to another thing while we're talking about social networking. What is it about Rove in this country? It's a program that everyone knows on, which is on Channel 10 on a Sunday night. It trends reliably every Sunday night.
Is it the demographic?
I think you might be onto something there, JD. Yeah, the demographic is there. But
it's the same people that are Twitterers are the people that are likely to watch Rove anyway. Yeah,
yeah, but it trends globally. Because the trending thing on the side of Twitter is a global trend.
That'd be a time zone issue, yeah. Because
everyone's
sleeping
in the
when
States?
When Rove's on, everybody's asleep. That's right, in America.
Oh, yeah. But I thought it was amazing. And I was watching Twitterfall at the time, which is one of those cascading web. If you go to twitterfall.com, you can see what I mean. But it's where when someone does a tweet, it falls down the screen at one tweet per every half second or something like that. And it was backlogging up to 600 or 700 tweets. I mean, where is this traffic coming from? So there you go. We Australians can do it quite well on getting our social networking skills up to speed, I think. So
yeah, for those who don't know what we're talking about, Rove, think in a kind of a short Australian Letterman.
Short?
A contemporary.
Oh, look, he's not all that bad. Have you watched the show?
Not lately. I've watched it years ago when it was a bit newer.
Yeah. I like Husey. Husey's good because I've worked with Husey before. Last week's one was absolutely hilarious. This current week one wasn't too bad, but he's just had a baby and that was all very good. And Rove, actually, that was one of the things, I think, not this last past weekend, but the weekend before, he mentioned that, or he inferred that he was going to have a child, which was completely wrong, but boy, oh boy, did it send the social networking site into actually
Do you think that was calculated? Do you think that was an intentional thing?
No, I don't think so, because he was actually blushing when he came back out of the break. He was quite red.
Oops.
Yes. So, anyway, that was a bit of a laugh. In other interesting news, web filters to gain the sense, or should I say sensors, are going to, what do you call it, Mr. Conroy's?
The Great Wall of Australia.
Yeah. They're going to really clamp down on internet video games now, because we don't have anything greater than an M15 Plus here in Australia for video games. Anything above that, anything rated R, is restricted classification.
that would be rated R. There isn't an R rating for video games.
That's right. It just can't come into the country.
Above M15 is refused classification and is illegal. So
are we a bit of a backwater here? Because we don't have that classification. Everywhere else in the world does.
Yes.
So what can we do about it? It's really...
so.
Well, I mean, particularly since you can download games and things from overseas anyway.
But they're going to block that with this Australian firewall.
Is that the intention?
The big Australian... yes. Yep,
that's what they're going to do.
Mm.
So, guess what? Gamers are generally reasonably tech savvy. They have good networking, you know, communication with their peers around the world. And
I can feel some pretty savage proxy servers coming on in certain countries.
Yep, the proxy servers and the VPN services will be getting a workout, and it won't slow them down.
Mm. But it's a bit of a shame, really, when you think that we've got a backward country attitude towards video games.
Well,
where everyone else in the world
you,
has
you
the
mentioned
right
in thing. The in the lead up of the show, you mentioned that the average age of a video game player in Australia is something like 30.
It is.
So to say that a game designed for anybody older than 15 is refused classification
is silly.
And illegal. Yeah.
Very
can't,
silly. And what does that mean for
Australian
people?
Australian adults decide how they want to, you know, spend their time
not
in front of a computer screen?
Not according to our government. But what does that mean if someone inadvertently from another country brings a, you know, CD or a DVD across of a game for a PlayStation or something, and it is one of those R-rated games in another country, which doesn't get classified here? Are they going to get hauled across because of the fact that they've...
Or it'll get confiscated by customs, you would think.
Customs should presumably take it off them, and destroy it as an illegal import, a prohibited import.
Hmm, something quite fundamentally wrong in this country. And I must admit, I was watching the Sunday program, which is a Channel 7 current affairs program, and they were going through the destruction of all the DVDs in Asia across the course of the weekend. Did you caught that? Mm. Did you see that?
Saw a bit of it.
Yeah, and they were talking one small dint, and it was just a chink out of their armour, and they had millions of discs that they were destroying because of the replication issues over there.
Yeah, these were DVDs with pirated content that, hadn't been paid for.
Absolutely. And I was trying to explain to my 7-year-old about how it works. He said, why do people do that? And I said, well, it's a good question, because they want to steal from others, really, don't they? So, but anyway, yeah, that's the video game shenanigans going on here in Australia at the moment. I think there's something sort of, it needs to be addressed.
It does.
Like, restricted. That rules out anything with any form of sexual content in it whatsoever. And I guess high levels of violence. Not that we need, I'm not sort of being an advocate for violence in our society, but I'm sort of thinking that as an adult, you have the right to make that decision.
Yeah, yeah.
It shouldn't be put up to a government or anything like that, so. Mm. All right, we'll see what happens. I'm sure people will work around it and proxy servers will pop up left, right and centre. The New South Wales Police, we also touched about this on the news. They're finally going high-tech. They have a big server which makes two copies of all the JPEGs that they get given or all the photos that they take at crime scenes.
Oh, yes.
And what this means to them is that they actually use a lot more of these photographs as evidence in court.
Mm-hmm.
But it also means that they can... have another soft copy or another copy where they can print it out on a piece of paper and they can doodle on it or whatever they need to do with it. But they've got, people can see it and access it, or law enforcement officers can access it.
And go back to the original version.
And you've still got the original version locked away in a video vault somewhere so that it can be used as in evidence as court. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
And especially if, because we've all got little phones in our cameras these days, or should I say the other way around,
cameras in our phones. Yep.
The happy snappers can just go snap, snap, snap and probably upload to a police server and say, yeah, you might want to have a look at this. But
I suppose it makes sense to have a policy for how to handle that sort of evidence, because I'm sure
it's been it admissible.
A little bit ad hoc up till now how individual police members have handled that as they've been given that sort of material. Mm. How do you make sure that it stays in its original form and doesn't get tampered with. But the other thing that springs to mind is that having a big server somewhere with all the evidence on it...
prime target.
Can anybody say honeypot?
But it's called SIMS. The Shared Imagery Management System, which will be targeted by... anyway. But if you think about it, there'll be more than... Surely they'll have more spots to store their data. It'll be like a Raider raid, surely. Drive here, drive there, and if one drive goes down, you swap it over and replicate it.
I'm sure.
Hot swap it.
I'm sure they do. I'm suspecting that it's going to end up being a bit of a target for people wanting to gain access to it.
Let's talk about ICANN. Can you? I can.
I can.
This is the...
Sorry.
Off you go. No, you can... Internet. International Corporation.
For the...
For assigned names.
Assigned names and numbers.
And numbers, yeah. Confirmed that Rod Beckstrom is going to be the new Chief Executive Officer.
Oh, okay.
I'm assuming that Paul Toomey has done his time there, because he used to be the boss there.
When we say names and numbers, what we're talking about here is the stuff that makes the internet work, the IP addresses and the domain names, the anything ending in .com or .com.au or that sort of thing.
Yeah. So anyway, Paul Toomey, who's the Australian CEO and president, has obviously he's hung up his numbers, and this is the new guy who's been appointed, Rod Beckstrom. In a statement issued before Beckstrom assembled a media conference in Sydney, ICANN chairman Peter Dengate Thrush said that Beckstrom was exactly the sort of strong person with a technical background that ICANN needed. So there you go.
Very good.
Maybe he will preside over the rolling out of IP6 and things like that. Have you dabbled with that?
Are these people responsible for IP6 as well as the existing IP4?
Well, they will be, yeah, as it starts to become more used, I would imagine.
Have you tinkered with that at all? Anyone?
Only
it looks daunting when you look at the hex variables for DNS and stuff. You go, oh, I don't want to go there. But that's only because we understand IP4, which is the current standard of assigning a domain name to an IP address, really.
Yeah, that's right. It's still just a number. That's all it is. It'll work in a slightly different way, but it'll work in a slightly better way in a lot of respects. So, we won't have to.
When's it going to happen? Do you know?
Well,
if it will,
yeah,
it's embedded in a lot of machines already. So if your network is set up to do it, it'll do it.
I've got a 2008 server which does it.
Hmm. Yeah,
and I've got Vista does it, and I'm sure Windows 7 will do it. I can't speak for the Mac platforms, but I'm sure it does.
It's inbuilt in OS 10.
What about Ubuntu?
Yeah, it's in all the Linux distributions to some degree or other. Whether it's turned on or not is a different matter, but. Okay. Yeah, it's all there ready to fly. It's just, as the lack of numbers becomes an issue and people upgrade, I'm not sure when the tipping point's going to be where it's going to start to become used.
All right, well, there you go. So new man helming at the helm of ICANN. Well, interesting to see what happens. Now, before we go to the break this evening, one of the other interesting things that I thought was just a laugh was this shopping website, the grocery website.
Oh, yes.
Now... it was a federal government promise that we were going to have this, you know, like Fuel Watch.
Yep,
whatever Fuel happened Watch. To Fuel Watch?
Shopper Watch.
Yeah.
How much is your lettuce going to be today?
Yeah, well, that's gone AWOL again now. And Choice, who was the company which was behind, I think they picked it up. They were the second people to have a go at the second bite of the cherry.
Yeah, Choice took it over from the government, didn't they? Yeah.
Choice have got their knickers in a knot about that too, so they're looking like taking the bat and ball and running with it.
They want to just do it themselves.
Yeah, they're going to do it themselves. But there was an issue, apparently, with supermarket chains not being able to give accurate pricing in the time frame required, which is why the federal government, well, that was their excuse of saying, no, we're not going to do this, we're going to stop it.
But, I mean, Fuel Watch was based on people just ringing in, spotting local fuel prices, wasn't it?
Either that or it was service station proprietors had a responsibility to ring. And I think they couldn't – what happened? It was a while back now. It's a bit grey and rusty here. But I think they had to hold their price for the following day after it had been lodged or something.
Right,
and they had to lodge it.
But you know, if people on commercial radio can sponsor a couple of hour segment in the morning during drive time saying ring in with the best fuel price you can find, surely you can do it with – you know, email us with the best lettuce price you've found.
Absolutely.
And I think it's hardly surprising that one or both of the two duopolistic supermarkets that we have in this country, you know,
it's a little bit
too hard for us to give us the prices because we don't actually want to, because it's going to spoil our business if we actually have this stuff published. Yeah. That's not surprising.
It'd be interesting when Lyd comes into the studio in 2 weeks' time, we can ask her about pricing and groceries and stuff like that. Because having done a bit of or being involved with certain products and services which find their way to supermarket shelves, it's a law unto its own in this country compared to any other country. You have to actually buy the space off the supermarket and pay rent and give them a bit of 50% profit share. And everyone goes, that's ridiculous. We don't do that anywhere else in the world. Mm. So
it's interesting just on that. I've been playing with Tram Tracker, which is an application for the iPhone. And so it tells you...
I didn't think you caught trams, JD.
I don't, but it's fun to play with.
Do you shake it or something? It's like shake the baby,
that's
you
right.
shake the
yeah,
tram.
No,
yeah.
No. Sorry. So it
that's
gives
public
you...
transport in Melbourne for anyone interested in where we originate from.
That's
these
right.
little things that go
Don't
up
ask me why the icon's a little puppy dog. I'll have to work that out one day. But anyway, so it'll tell you where your closest stop is. But more importantly, it'll tell you how far away your tram is. And the way it does this is if you're a tram tracker user, you actually say, I'm on tram number 1, 2, 3, 4. And every couple of minutes, it'll upload to the Tram Tracker server where you are, and therefore where your tram is.
So it relies on data from the users.
From the user group.
Okay.
So why can't you run, you know, grocery.com the same?
And you'd have to have a little iPhone app, and you'd have to send iPhone users in.
Or Android, or N97, or, you
know, logic is sound, JD. Mm. The logic is sound. Why not? When you're in there, you can, you know... do something with your phone or get it electronically put into your system and send it off to them.
So, for example, I'm in my local supermarket. I won't mention any brand names. And I've got a can of whatever in front of me. I type in that I've got the SPC baked beans and whatever it is. Spaghetti.
You just mentioned a brand.
I did, sorry.
Are they still in existence, SPC?
No, they're not.
No,
so that's
good,
okay,
well done. Yeah.
That's sort of why I picked them. Anyway, and I can say it's $3.25 and then put it online and find out if there's a better price somewhere else. And I might choose not to buy it here. I'll go somewhere else and buy it.
But how many people are going to do that?
People during a recession that are trying to save a penny will probably...
They'll all go and buy that other supermarket.
They'll spend all their money on their IP instead of buying groceries.
Yeah, Telstra will reap the benefits, won't they?
Not sure about this.
Anyway, I'm glad you mentioned iPhones and little applications because we're going to talk about that. Adam's got a very interesting view from the couch. He's lifted the hood. I was going to say got a screwdriver out and pick the case off, but no, he hasn't done that. He's got his loaner from Optus, and he gave it a bit of a run for his money, the new 3GS, and we're going to find out all about
new
that
iPhone.
Just after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Police called to control crowds at a technology fair in Singapore.
The sale of Apple TVs has gone up a third in the past year.
How frustrating.
Very.
Twitter came to life like you wouldn't believe.
What next, I say?
Around about $10 billion from the NBN.
Well, that's a bit unusual, isn't it? I'm not sure what to make of that.
Those people who found themselves hacked turned into porn stars very quickly.
Entertaining.
Oh, look, Dr. Ron, I haven't seen you like that before.
Informative.
Like my old phone is at like 32 by 32 pixels.
Independent.
Well, I smoke.
I smoke, that's yeah. right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Radio.
Don't breathe this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
There's been a bit of chat happening on the chat whilst we've been in the break. That's where you do chat. Come along and read it, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. It was alluding to some issues we had with iTunes and our podcast of recent times. Well, just to let everybody know what actually happened was our host in the United States cracked the SADs with the amount of bandwidth we were using. And as a result...
That was the unlimited account, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the unlimited account. And how that works is different in Australia as opposed to in other parts of the world, because apparently in the United States, unlimited is not what it seems.
Right.
No. Anyway, as a result of being on our unlimited account, they decided to give us another unlimited account, which had a limited bandwidth portal on it. And once the data rate exceeded that limit, it just slowed everything down to a snail's pace. But anyway, all that aside, what they did, they actually moved us from one particular IP address to another IP address and did all the routing for us. And everything was working really, really well, except for iTunes. And then, after a few complaints going, what on earth's going on here? And a bit of investigative work, we discovered that changing the DNS and pointing it to the new IP address rather than using their routing over there... fixed all the problems. So we apologise on their behalf. Well, we didn't do it. Obviously, it just goes to show that a lot of people are downloading the show and listening to it. And we appreciate
that. Great.
That's good. We're glad we're entertaining people all around the world. So none more than us here in the studio, that's for sure. Let's talk about the Apple iPhone because it hit the streets here. And I think one of the interesting things which came out in the news, which I had a bit of a laugh about, apparently the Sydney store, they didn't want you to go in there in case unless you bought one. You only come in here if you buy one, but if you don't want to buy one, go away.
I saw that, and the Chaser are up there too, apparently doing something.
Oh, really?
Mm.
So is that something to look forward to on the
apparently
next Chaser's
so.
War on everything?
But they did then go in and buy some, I understand. So.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could imagine those guys would be Apple people.
You'd think so, wouldn't
you? Yeah, they've just got that... than Apple. Look
about. Careful.
Be careful.
Yeah, I'm far be it from me to pick on those boys. Oh, boy. Anyway, yeah, so it hit the streets. Now, JD, have you heard anything sort of that's startling, apart from alluded to a few things, but should we go to
Adam first and we can cover off anything else?
Well, let's have a listen to Adam's his view from the couch this week, because he got a loaner.
Wow.
From Optus, which he has to give back.
Right. We'll find out if he's going to buy one.
Absolutely. And see what he thought about it, because, you know, you got to have a look under the bonnet on these things. Especially if you
kick the tires.
Especially if you're a tech head, yeah.
If you already own an iPhone 3G, don't fret too much about the new iPhone 3GS. I've had a few hours to play with my iPhone 3GS review unit from Optus, and so far I'm very impressed. It's a great phone, and if I was in the market for a new phone, I'd certainly pay the extra for the 3GS over the 3G. Even so, the new iPhone is not enough of an improvement to tempt me to pay out the contract on my iPhone 3G and then upgrade. In a way, Apple is a victim of its own generosity. If the only way I could get the 3.0 software update was to buy an iPhone 3GS, then I'd be far more tempted to upgrade. As it is, I've got 3.0 happily running on my iPhone 3G and even my old iPhone 2G, which has been entrusted to the lady of the house. Now, S stands for speed, according to Apple, but under most conditions, the improvement on the iPhone 3GS is marginal. The iPhone has been upgraded from 3.6 to 7.2 megabits per second HSDPA for downloading stuff from the mobile broadband networks, but these are theoretical limits that you'll never reach. The 7.2 megabit phone running on an Optus network was generally slower than my 3.6 megabit phone running on Telstra, although Optus is known for its sluggish mobile broadband network, so I'll reserve final judgment on that until after I get my hands on an iPhone 3GS review unit from Telstra. As for the boost in processing power, the improvement is noticeable but not striking unless you're really pushing the phone to the limit. The only time I really saw the benefit of the extra grunt was playing the graphics-intensive car game Need for Speed Undercover. The real speed boost in the phone is Safari's render engine, which loads complicated sites such as The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald in a third of the time it takes my iPhone. It's breathtaking, even for an iPhone 3G owner, but again, it's not enough to tempt me to ditch my iPhone 3G before the contract's up. The two most tempting reasons to upgrade would be the improvements to the battery and the camera. Now, I haven't had a chance to test the battery yet, but my iPhone 3G already manages to struggle through the day unless I really thrash it, so I'm not too concerned about battery life. If I commuted into town each day, chewing through the battery while sitting on a train, I'd certainly care more about battery life. Now, the move to a 3-megapixel camera is long overdue. It's the camera that should have been in the iPhone 3G I already have. As it is, the 2-megapixel camera in my phone is very frustrating because when I happen to take a great shot, it doesn't print up nearly as well as if I'd taken it even with a decent entry-level happy snapper such as my old Canon IXA 60. It's not just the IXUS's 6 megapixels that make the difference, it's also the superior optics compared to a camera phone. The 3 megapixel camera in the new iPhone 3GS is obviously a step in the right direction, as is the autofocus, but it still wouldn't be enough to see me put my Canon IXUS in the cupboard for good. The iPhone's main weakness as a camera is that in bright conditions, it lacks dynamic contrast and loses the fine details in the shadow. There's been no improvement on this front since the very first iPhone 2G, which is very disappointing. The iPhone also lacks a flash, which seriously limits its versatility. The one thing that's really impressed me about the new iPhone is the quality of the video capture, something I can't do on my iPhone 3G. I'm also impressed with how easy it is to edit clips on the phone. It's the typically silky smooth Apple user experience that we've come to know. The video clips, which are VGA 640 by 480, 30 frames per second, are very sharp and smooth, certainly on par with what I can capture with my old Canon IXUS, although the Canon has a much better microphone, even though it's primarily a still camera. As with the still photos, the iPhone 3GS's video capture still suffers from poor dynamic contrast. Editing the videos on the phone is insanely easy. A timeline appears at the top of the screen, and you can drag from either side to trim the beginning and end of the clip. You can also drag your finger along the timeline to preview different parts of the clip, with the timeline zooming in to allow more accurate adjustments. My only major concern is that there's no option to preserve the original clip or to undo a trim, so there'll surely be tears when someone accidentally deletes the wrong bit of a clip. The trimming is handy if you want to email clips, as every 10 seconds consumes about 1 meg, but for really precious moments you'd be better off preserving the entire clip and then editing it on a computer. As with the camera, I know I'd still get a much better dynamic range from my trusty old Canon EXOS. Now, the iPhone 3GS is a great phone and a welcome addition to the iPhone family, but it's mostly about playing catch-up and making incremental improvements. If there's already an iPhone 3G in your pocket, don't throw it in the bin just yet.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
What do you reckon, JD? You've got an iPhone 3G, not an S?
I've got a 3G. I've, as Adam has, upgraded to OS 3 last week. If you've had a look at the Tech Talk forums, I've put a bit of a post there about my struggles in getting it jailbroken successfully and stably.
Yeah, Adam lost all of his photos when he did an upgrade to his old one, I think.
Yeah, and I can see, having restored my phone about 5 times now in an effort to get it stable, I can see how that could happen, because if you rely on iTunes to do the backup as part of the upgrade process, it doesn't in fact back up your, or doesn't synchronize your data.
Oh.
All it does is back up your apps. Whereas if you do a complete sync and a complete backup yourself, then it will sync your photos and everything else.
So manual's the key to doing an upgrade, is
I think
it?
So.
Just copy it all off, burn it to a disk, stick it in a cupboard, then do your upgrade.
And there's a couple of tricks if you're interested in jailbreaking the phone. Again, the forum's got some details there. There's a bit of a trick to the Red Snow updater, that there's two application installers it provides for you, Cydia, which is a fairly old, trusted one now, and a brand new Icy, does the same function, written by a different person. They don't like each other very much, which I found to my chagrin trying to install them both. So, have a read of the forum.
So if you've got one of these, you go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au and you'll find out all about how to do it.
In the how-to section.
Very good.
There you go. You can come and ask us now on chat.techtalkradio.com.au. We're here. We're watching. Adam Z, if you want to ask him a question about what you just heard on the radio, jump online now. If you're listening to us on the podcast, we'll come along next week and say good day to us at chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Now, 3 are going to bring out their new iPhone. They've finally managed to get it across the line, and that happens next month.
That's right. So
July.
Every carrier will have it now.
Yes.
Which is good.
That's good. Telstra, I haven't heard much about what Telstra are up to, but Vodafone have they're in the news.
Aren't Vodafone and 3 the same people now?
No, not for a while.
Not
for 2 or 3 years, I don't think.
Oh, okay.
Although they are going to do a bit of a buyback on some of their shops, because they franchised them out.
And they're going to
buy them back so they can close them. Oh, who said that?
These are the 3 shops or the Vodafone shops?
The Vodafone shops.
Ah.
3, I think. There's 3 things everywhere. You walk into a shopping centre and there's a little cubicle out front. You know, they put them in those middle of the walkways so that you trip over them when you walk into places. And they also have them in the shopping centres, like as in shops.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
So they're everywhere.
And there's always people in them too. There's always some interest around the 3 shop, isn't there?
Maybe.
No?
Maybe?
Maybe just the ones I go near.
Maybe. Vodafone Australia has confirmed that customers will be able to buy an iPhone 3GS without signing up to plans. The carrier has also responded to controversy over competitors' plans to charge users an additional fee for using the modem, using their iPhone as a modem, otherwise known as tethering
controversy that we talked about last week.
Well, in fact, if you have a good Google, you can find ways of tethering without charges, but anyway.
But why would they go there anyway? It's just money grabbing telcos that are trying to get in there and charge for everything. Like, that's
I think I predicted last week that the market would sort it out, and it sounds like it is.
Absolutely. From Friday, customers will be able to buy the 32 gig iPhone 3GS from Vodafone for $1,129 up front.
In the clear, no contracts.
No.
Beautiful.
The 16 gig model for $929 and the 8 gig model for $759.
People are going to go for that.
Is that going to? Yeah, exactly.
Well, I bought mine outright.
And why did you buy yours?
Well,
outright,
I already had an Optus SIM, and I was going to buy an Optus prepaid phone because the Telstra ones were much more expensive. And just so happens that my work uses Optus, so I can swap SIMs around pretty easily. So that's why I did
that's
that.
That's a key to it, though. We should talk about that in just a sec, but keep going.
So that's what I did. So it's still locked to Optus, although now Ultra Snow, the jailbreak app, is out that lets you unlock your phone for free, which is good. But I haven't done that because I don't need to, because both of my phone numbers are on the same carrier.
Now,
but if your phone number was on a different carrier, all you'd have to do is go in and you'd change the message center number and the
The phones are locked.
Oh, they're really locked. Even when you buy them outright.
No, but correct. So you have to, even if you buy the phone outright, you still have to jailbreak it.
You have to buy it outright from Apple if you want to get one without a lock to a carrier.
Okay, but even still, if you look about the technicalities of changing, say you're on one carrier and you want to move to another for whatever reason, the setting up of things like APNs, access port, I think, what's that acronym for? Access port something or other?
APN,
we did have that once upon a time.
Yeah, anyway, it's basically when you have a phone or a device, mobile broadband modem, for example, or anything, and you want to use data on a particular carrier's network, you have to put the appropriate APN in there for...
Access point name.
There you go. Well done, Dr. Graham.
Now, fortunately for the iPhone, because of the upgrade to 3 and some of the changes that have occurred there, when you do the upgrade, it actually asks you if you want to to install your carrier's settings.
All right.
And so the carrier settings are all over the place. People have downloaded them and kept them and you know, repackaged them. So you can actually download the settings files for pretty much any Australian carrier at the moment.
Well, that's handy. So that means you don't have to go and do that fiddly stuff like typing in.
And that might be how you can get tethering without paying for it.
Says he, looking strangely across through the boom microphone here in the radio station. It's interesting, though, because APNs traditionally, you've got to program that for your internet. You've got to program your MMS portals for your, because everyone does it differently. You've got to reprogram your message center numbers for your SMSs. It's a fiddly thing. So you're telling me that these setup files, actually, what do? You just download them, run them, and it changes it all for you?
You open them in Safari inside the iPhone. So you browse to them, you click on them, they're automatically downloaded and installed.
Okay. Now, Adam was saying that Safari runs incredibly fast. 3 times faster, I think he said.
It would on a GS, yes.
In the new... Yeah, why is that? Is it just the new engine that Safari is? Because I've always thought Safari is one of the best browsers around.
I think there's
good
a couple
render
of,
engine.
Yeah, look, I think there's a couple of things at play. The processor is slightly faster. It's a 600 gig rather than, or meg rather than 400 meg processor. There's double the RAM, which always makes a bit of a difference in a computer, handheld or otherwise. And, you know, a newer, faster, better version of Safari's probably got a bit to do with it as well.
Okay.
And this version of Safari is allegedly HTML5 compatible. And so Google Latitude, which I'm hanging out for now, for the iPhone has been demoed recently at one of the iGoogle demos. And it's going to use HTML5 rather than its own app.
Oh.
So HTML5 allows you to upload geo settings.
Now HTML5 is the new incarnation, or should I say it's the evolution of HTML, which is the hypertext markup language, which is the underlying system in the internet. You know, you look at a web page, basically it's HTML. We're up to HTML5, which is a new version, and the reason why it keeps evolving, because back when HTML was just a wee lad in its father's eyes, we didn't have things like video. We didn't have audio snippets and stuff like that. So
no, it was just text and maybe a couple of pictures.
Exactly. Yeah. So back then, back in the early days of HTML, they didn't write for video, or including, you know, video encapsulations and things like that, which is what we demand in our media-heavy internet of today. So this is just incarnation 5, and they've just written new tags and things like that in there so that we as programmers can embed video with one line of code as opposed to 20 lines of code.
Yeah, and people now carry smartphones around that are capable of transmitting a GPS coordinate back that's actually helpful to writing an application. So,
well, this is it. And I think Google's always been a fairly strong advocate that 80% of the world's data is geospatial. That is, it has some form of reference to the planet, whether it be a phone number, a postcode, or where your tram, train, bus, aeroplane is. It's got a reference to it, and you want to be able to interact with that, don't you?
So there's all sorts of good things happening with the iPhone applications. The jailbreak stuff is interesting. We've had some questions.
Heat.
You'll get
thermal.
To that.
Okay, sorry.
We've had some questions about whether you can MMS on a iPhone 2G, so the old GSM GPRS version, and you can. But you need to jailbreak your phone. And again, I'll put
another
the,
app. Another is there app. Another app involved?
There is another app involved. So if you want a quick look at the app's name and what you need, again, go to forums.techtalk.com.au.
Forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
That's the one. Thank you. I've put some details there, and you can go and Google for the rest if you need it. But you can do it. Apparently, the video and picture quality is pretty low, but it's an MMS after all, so you don't expect the world. But you can actually do it. So it's software-based, not hardware-based. I'm looking still to see whether the voice control and whether the video control can be enabled on the 3G version of the iPhone. And,
okay. I use my voice control a lot. It's really handy when you're driving.
Yeah, it is. Now, I've got a free app that does voice dialing, but voice control over the whole phone would be really nice. So,
what would you want to do? Voice control, like connect to internet? Or
well, when I'm driving along, get
send
it to
SMS.
Look stuff up for me, yeah.
Look stuff up.
Open an application, like the like the GPS driving navigation.
Read the latest Michael Jackson news.
Yeah, that's the one. Yep. Yeah.
What I'm looking forward to is being able to stream to a mobile. Now, that's
Well, there's a Ustream app for the iPhone. So
is
it? Yes.
I was reading also, whilst doing research for the program, that there is a development company right here in Melbourne which is doing an S60 streaming application, so you can actually hear Windows Media Streams and I think Shoutcast Streams and potentially QuickTime Streams as well. Or the
AAC, when you say S60, AAC. You mean that's the operating system used on Nokia phones like
the
yours
Symbian
and mine.
Symbian operating system, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully that won't be too far. So we can listen to radio stations on our mobiles, which would be great in the car.
Mm. You can certainly do that on the iPhone already. There's a range of apps to use on-air radio stations. And on the chat, I need to see if I can find it, someone was talking about an application that they were using to stream this show on their iPhone.
Oh, yeah.
I just need to find it, and I can't.
All right. Well, whilst you're...
Heat.
Yes, talk to us about heat, because that's also another issue that's come out in the news just today about the new 3GS getting a tad warm.
Yeah, Adam was talking about battery life and how he hasn't had any issues with battery life, but someone that did in the States apparently used some application awfully heavily on a white iPhone and managed to burn the back case of it.
Oh,
so burn some, the back case?
There's some, there's
are they
some
plastic
pictures.
Or are they metal or what are they?
They're plastic in the GS version.
Also, it melted a bit, did it?
Well, it looks a bit brown. The photos actually appear pink, but most people think it's actually brown and it's an artifact that it looks pink on the photo.
Mm.
But there's two brown bands going down the back of the iPhone. Bit of conjecture about what that is. Some people think it's the sides of the battery.
Skid marks.
And that would make sense. But there's nothing
else. It's going too fast.
There's allegedly nothing else inside the phone from those that have stripped it down in those areas, but the battery does lie in between them, so that's the thought.
That's very funny, actually. I remember when the first iPhone came out, people actually pulled it apart, literally.
Oh, they still do. Yeah, absolutely.
To see what was in it. You know, to desolder the batteries and all sorts of things. They still do. Is this just a hobby for people with iPhones or curiosity, maybe?
Didn't you ever pull gadgetry apart, Andrew, when you were...
Just to see?
Well, I did, but traditionally it was at end of life, not at beginning of life.
You grew out of it, did you?
No, I still like to tinker and take the lid off and void the warranty by having a squeeze. Mm. Well, look at that, but no, I didn't actually...
But you just said you void the warranty, you're not waiting to end of life.
A majority of the gadgets that I bought that had a good price tag to it, I would wait until it was end of life before I would pull the goddamn thing apart.
Right.
After all, you know.
Oh, no, I'd always pull something apart. These things are sealed, you have to know what you're doing to take these apart, but any other computer I've ever owned, I've always cracked the back of it.
So you pulled one apart? Absolutely.
Not an iPhone, no.
Haven't you? Oh, well, there you go. I rest my case. See?
So what's still missing from the iPhone? The iPhone's still a... Is it...
Look,
there's not a lot of businesses that are getting it. Your business may be an exception, but I was reading also today that it's really hard for some businesses to justify getting iPhones for the fleet, for want of a better term.
There's a whole lot of chats around where companies are actively discouraging people from getting them because of productivity claims.
They're going to waste their time shaking the baby or whatever.
Wilfing.
Yeah. But I've got this fantastic application the other day. Talking about shaking the baby, there's a great photo called Running with Scissors. And you need to read the description on the iTunes store. The description is fantastic. So I run around the house playing with this Running with the Scissors application, remembering the actual description of it on the iTunes store. The game itself's pretty inane, but
we'll go and look that up later on.
Fantastic. Shaking the Baby, for those who want to know, was an application that arrived on iTunes and disappeared as quickly as it arrived because it was a bit
fairly tasteless.
Yes, fairly tasteless.
Have to say.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Anyway, moving on. Graham, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, is the support there for syncing with things like Exchange Server and so on in the iPhone these days? That's all working fine?
Well, you don't sync with Exchange Server these days. You sync with Google.
Do you?
Well, the iPhone will let you do
both.
Well,
you see, with...
Not
corporate
together.
People, they're going to want to sync to their Exchange Server.
Yeah, but I do that, but via Google.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Because the common denominator these days is the cloud, and Google is providing that service free of charge.
And Google syncs to your Exchange server, does
Absolutely.
It? Okay.
And Google syncs with a lot more...
I'm not sure that I trust that.
Yeah, well, that's you. You're a cynical old person over there, but that's fine. The good thing that I've noticed, and I can't speak for the iPhone because I don't have one. Someone out there might be able to tell me. But what you can do with your contacts and your calendar and your even your email, if you wanted to, I don't do my email though, syncs with the contacts and the calendar in Google, which means that whenever you log on to iGoogle, you get the same as what's on at work, whether it work or not.
Okay, and that's
then,
a good idea.
And then when you log in, then what happens is Google then syncs to your Exchange server and pulls the same thing down. So whether you're in the field, say you ring me in the field and I get your phone number, I can go save in my contacts. When I get back to work, it's in my Outlook, it's up on Google, it's absolutely everywhere.
It's everywhere.
And if I do the same with an appointment, if I'm out in the city or something like that and someone rings me and says, come and see me on 2 o'clock Wednesday, I can check my calendar and put that particular appointment in. When I get back to the office, it's there. So and if someone's in the office, vice versa, it just pops up on my...
So what you're saying is no more excuses for forgetting the wife's birthday.
No. Or your wedding anniversary, for that matter.
Now, fair enough.
Anyway, but no, that's the way I do it. Everyone should think about seriously going via Google, because the other good thing about Google, it keeps a backup of all those things in case things get stolen, lost, or burnt down.
Now, depending where you work, you may not want to access Google because of security reasons, which would be an issue for me, but that's another story.
Why? What do you do?
Well, I've got stuff. I've got stuff that shouldn't be in the public domain. But yeah, you can certainly, as you said, upload to Google. Exchange services work. My boss uses an iPhone directly to the Exchange server via wireless. I sync with Outlook to do it my way. Without using wireless, I do it by a
tether. Which means you only get the updates on your phone when you plug it into your
workstation. Synchronizes and moves on, and that way I don't use, because I don't have a data plan normally on my phone. I'm on holidays at the moment.
You so get I've, a tight boss, haven't I've you? I bought one. Doesn't like giving you a data plan. Goodness me.
Does the iPhone have a camera facing the user yet?
No.
No. So you still can't do video calls on an iPhone?
There are lots of patent applications out there from Apple that look like they will. But not there just at the moment.
So you've got to have physically a camera that's on the front that you can look at, right?
To be able to do that, you would imagine.
Because otherwise,
you're looking at the back of a camera.
Mind you, my old iMate used to be able to do video film. Yeah, used to do video calls, but the camera was on the back, and it had this little mirror so you could line yourself up in the camera.
Right.
I mean, there's a way, I guess, really, isn't there?
But you still couldn't see the other person.
That was a bit of an issue.
Yeah, you'd have to stand in front of a mirror.
Come on, but who uses video calls these days? Like, I think we first all tried it when phone company says, this is the next big thing, and no one used it. Then they gave them away for a weekend, so we tried it.
Your hair done or cut off or something.
It's a bit like sitting in a studio scratching your nose when you get on so many cameras pointing at you. You just can't do it. But no, I must admit, I did get a wrong call one day on a video conference call. Oh. Very funny, actually.
And I believe you still can't edit Word documents and things that you open up.
Well, actually, you can. There's applications to download to do that.
Oh, I just can't do it natively.
But why would you want to be editing a Word document on a small device, whether it be an iPhone or anything?
I had the Word, Excel, whatever packages in my Pocket PC version smartphone, and never once touched a Word document on it.
Really?
Okay. Even though it was embedded. So
not tempted while you were sitting waiting at a tram stop?
I played with it once to see how it worked.
Or on a 2-hour flight to somewhere?
He's too busy shaking the baby. You don't go do work when you're that. You're in the iStore downloading games and checking out the new things.
That's right.
That's what you do these days on these gadgets.
I found it on the chat room. Two Crows Down was talking about an application called F-Stream, which I've not used, but he said he's using it to stream our show at the moment. So
Two Crows Down is. He drives trucks for a crust, and he's out. And I think last time I saw him on Twitter, he was out in the middle of Western Australia.
So he's listening to the show live on the internet using his mobile broadband on his iPhone while he's driving his truck.
Well, he's in Perth. There you go. He just came up. He says he's in Perth.
Fantastic.
Isn't that great?
I love the technology. And New Zealand are taking us live off the internet.
Absolutely.
I love this show.
It does. It gets out there. It gets in like liquid into this chalk.
Yes.
Now, some other interesting things that are iPhone related.
Yes.
The Apple TV, which is...
Someone asked me about the Apple TV today at work. What happens to it? What's it doing?
It sits there as a set-top box and it does.
Is it slowly evolving into something? Like,
well, you know, Apple have always said it's one of their toys or their hobbies, and they haven't killed it off.
Is that what they call it?
They haven't killed it off just yet.
It's supposed to play videos to your It's a file-serving type little box, isn't it?
It can be a file-serving box. So it's a set-top box that allows you to download content to it and play it back, or stream content to it from iTunes from another computer in your house, or the server in my case, and play it back. But it's pretty locked down. It needs to be an MP4 with the Apple encoding and so forth. Through iTunes. Now, there are ways to hack that as well. Of course, I've done that. So mine plays all sorts of different things back, and you can put different applications on it too if you hack them. But silently this week, Apple released an update to 2.4. Now, what that does, pretty much the only thing that it does, is gives you gestures on your remote control. So you can now pair your iPhone to your Apple TV and use it to be the remote control for it. But you can use gesturing.
Fairly expensive remote control.
Fairly expensive, but people that buy Apple TVs like myself are likely to buy iPhones. So,
you like to have your iPhone in your pocket anyway.
That's right.
And it saves looking under the couch.
All those broken remote controls. Yeah, absolutely. So now you can use gestures to flick fast forward, flick reverse, chapter search, all that sort of stuff. So interesting. There was some patent adverts from Apple talking about a controller for the Apple TV, and people's thinking
a controller. What you mean, as in like a remote controller?
Well, as in a wand controller, like a Wii controller, is what it looked like.
Waving around in the air.
So this might be the first step, that they're using gestures to get people used to it. The other suggestion is that maybe with the success of the App Store, and particularly in the gaming area for the iPhone, that you might see that moving across to the Apple TV and using the iPhone as the controller for it. If you happen to be an Apple only family. As we're slowly turning into. Well, not slowly. We now have turned into.
I'd love to get something like that in our place, because we have young kids. Mm. And kids and DVDs just don't go. They scratch. They end up being Frisbees and getting lost.
Yeah.
And to be able to have all those movies on a file server, which, you know, which one do you want to watch today, kids? And they pull down whatever it is that they want
to
watch.
That's right. You get your set-top box to download things. I know you've got one. I've got the Apple TV stick plugged into the iTV stick plugged in the back of my Mac. So I record free-to-air TV, ABC 2 and 3 when it comes out.
I'll bring on ABC 3.
And get the playback to the kids when it's not on.
Yeah. We have a collection of ABC kids stored for that very reason.
Absolutely.
When they're up late at night,
and
if they're cook or something like that.
Out of town and that sort of thing.
So is it becoming a viable option for a file server?
Look, I think that, really, to be quite honest, this version of the Apple TV is pretty limited. There's a lot of people saying, well, why haven't they gone for the whole cover flow interface that iTunes uses? You know, you can flick and you can see the various album covers fly past.
Yep.
People are saying, well, why haven't they done that on the Apple TV? You've got to remember the Apple TV is a really slow Atom processor,
it's locked down too. You can only get stuff off the iTunes store, can't you? Or am I wrong?
And YouTube as well. Yeah.
And YouTube. Oh, well, quality.
And Flickr, yeah. if you jailbreak it, you can do all sorts of other things with it, as I said.
Mm.
So this version's pretty limited. It's reasonably old technology now. It's been around for quite a few years without an update in hardware. So I think the next version, if it ever comes out, the next toy, will be something to look forward to.
Fantastic. That was a pretty long segment on iPhones. People think they've got shares in the company. But no, we don't. We don't. Equally all around the place.
It's good to hear all the news, though, and get into the nitty-gritty of it all.
Absolutely, because it'll disappear, and I don't know, we'll have the iPhone 4 come along probably by the end of the year. We've got to get through the Windows 7 launch, which I suspect that'll be the next big news thing when that all kicks in.
We're going to have some very Microsofty shows coming up when that all kicks off, aren't
we? Absolutely, absolutely. But
I'll just stay home that night, I think.
Oh, you might learn something, Jay.
I might.
No, well, you're one of these people that likes running. What's that application that you run on Mac that runs any application?
Parallels.
Parallels. That's it.
So my MacBook. At the moment, it's fairly heavily tasked with the videoing, but
You'll have to load up Windows 7 on Parallels and see how it runs. Well, see if you can run Ubuntu. OS
I've got
X
XP and Ubuntu both there. Yes.
My Windows 7 machine starting to give me dire warnings about it's about to expire.
Oh,
because I've got the beta on it still.
Oh well, I'm thinking there's an upgrade path. I think from what some of our
there's
users
no upgrade saying. Path. No, you can't.
Oh really?
No,
F disk start again.
Yeah.
Let's format the drive and oh well, there you go. That's life. Hey, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. We do go on this show a little bit.
We do a little bit.
Dr. Graham is here. Because we haven't got the little guy in the middle there. interjects all the time. And JD here talking all about Macs and things like that. Yes. What was I going to say? Yes. Chat. Come and visit us on our chat. Welcome to 401 Whitehorse, who's just popped up there. Could have been somebody else in Whitehorse. But nonetheless, come along and say good day, chat.techtalkradio.com.au. We'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
we've now got the technology. It's time to get silly with it.
Are people still using Internet Explorer?
That would be a shame.
Do you reckon it'll take up? I reckon the youth of today will love it.
Like a Dr. Evil's boardroom.
Yeah, it does change the way the browser behaves.
Oh, I'm excited.
Don't worry about Kaspersky. Get into your local road sign.
Yeah.
I like a fresh install, me personally, but nonetheless.
Entertaining.
I was in until you said maggots.
Informative.
How do you decide who to follow?
Independent.
Oh, aren't they the biggest crock?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
No.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one weird technology radio show.
Yes, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Welcome back. I'm Andrew McComb, Dr. Graham.
Hello.
And Dr. JD in this evening, because Dr. Ron is absent. He had another better offer to do. So anyway, he'll be back next week, all things going according to plan. Whilst we've been talking about iPhones and things like that, something else which came across the news desk this week, which I thought was timely, was nearly 8 years after the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks in the United States, Australia's economic watchdog has recommended some airport security measures be streamlined and background identity checks on prepaid mobile phones be abolished. Did you know that you had to have a background check on a prepaid mobile phone? You're all speechless, I can tell.
Yes.
I didn't know you had to have a background check for a prepaid mobile phone.
A background check I didn't know about.
Yeah.
You have to provide your name and address or something, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's just something to do with the fact that with what happened recently, if you lose your SIM card, someone knows how to track you down or something. I don't know. But I thought that was amazing. The Productivity Commissioner, in a draft report released, said that the phone checks and some air security requirements could not be justified and that made much of the relevant legislation was ineffective or obsolete. That just stems from the paranoia of the early 2000s, I think, doesn't it? So, anyway, background checks for prepaids. Mm. What's the world coming to? Other interesting news this week, MySpace. Is this the end? Because we've been speaking a lot about social networking sites, but MySpace, according to the New York Times, is going to cut 2/3 of its staff outside the United States.
Okay.
Apparently, the online music sharing and network service owned by Rupert Murdoch's News Corp said that it was going to close at least 4 international offices and eliminate 2/3 of its staff outside the United States as it tries to adjust to the slowing audience growth and falling advertising. Well, I didn't think MySpace had much advertising on it in the first place, because isn't that the thing that just repels people from social networking sites?
Well, yeah, but it does have advertising on it.
Does it? I'm not a MySpace user. Are you?
MySpace pages usually annoy me. Because the first thing everybody puts on their MySpace page is some music player. And then the second and third things they put on are also music players. So you go to a MySpace page and 3 tracks start playing simultaneously.
What about Facebook?
Don't you find that?
No.
It is annoying.
I must admit, I do hate a website that plays music at you as soon as you get there.
Well,
the instinctively thing you do is you navigate away from it, especially at 2 in the morning when
Ustream
the family's
does
asleep.
Does that, which That's is damned right. annoying when you're trying to set things up in the middle of the night.
And, most MySpace pages have a music player on them. So, yeah, that annoys me a bit.
As in what, it just plays inane background music or do they breach copyright and put some top 40 track on there?
They have their favourite music playing, their favourite tracks playing. Okay. Yeah.
All right, so maybe the days of MySpace are numbered if they're going to start culling staff like that. Facebook seems to have been better at opening up its appeal to more age groups in more markets than MySpace has.
Mm.
But yeah, you got to look at some of these, because I think Twitter's all the rage now. Everyone's time challenged, and as a result, I love the sound of a 128 character blog. It doesn't take long to read, does it? And you can sift and sort and look at the ones that you want to look at and don't look at all the rubbish that tends to fly past.
And that's exactly what you do, yeah.
Just yeah.
Look through them. Yep,
I did, during the course of the week, I was lecturing. I did a thing called Web Savvy 101 in the middle of our fair city here to a lot of paying customers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite interesting. They were all a bit negative of Twitter when
really?
We first got there. But they were of an age group that weren't sort of tech savvy, if you know what I mean, because there was a bit of a backlash. Like, what do we need more of this stuff for? And then once we sat down and told them that, hey, this is great because you can selectively receive information from people who you want, you can actually broadcast information to those who are following you, and it's a really cheap form of content management on your website because you can embed a little Twitter feed like we do on Tech Talk Radio on the front of your webpage. Once I sort of explained to them the benefits of it, you should have seen them turn around. I've never seen iron filings to a magnet.
The light turned on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Twitter's one of those things. It really does sound useless until you actually start using it.
Well, yes, you're right, Graham.
and it took us a while. I mean, the first few couple of times we mentioned Twitter on the show, we were a bit skeptical about it.
Yeah. Yeah, but until you, as you say, until you sit down and actually use it and start following, because there's a lot of other little services out there, which third-party apps that you can use on these sort of social networking sites, and I think that's the key to it. Because if we didn't have things like Twitter Fall, because Twitter Fall is fantastic for updating in real time, watching stuff happen.
I don't use any of that. I've just got two or three people that I follow on Twitter, carefully selected. One of them's Lid, and she comes up with some magnificent stuff. And yeah, it just means that whenever I'm, you know, stuck sitting in a queue waiting or waiting for a tram or whatever it might happen to be, it gives you something to flick through, some news, some current items.
Because we don't have tram track on Area 60, do we? We've got to do something else. Well, there's Apple users.
Yeah, so it just gives you quick access to some stuff that's likely to be interesting because you've chosen your followers, the people you're going to follow very carefully.
Mm. Now, have you seen in Twitter there's a new thing called Twoops? TWOOPS.
And hang on, it's a group of, so we all jump to our laptops.
It's a group of Twitter followers.
Oh, is it?
Oh, no.
Is that a collective noun for Twitter followers?
Yes,
Twoops. Anyway, it's amazing how Twitter has affected the English language in its short 12, 24 months of being in existence, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's something that really fascinates me, and I have to hold myself back from talking about this sort of stuff on the show too much. But the way all of these technology things have an impact on the English language.
The thing I find incredibly funny is you hear Luddites talking on other radio stations about this technology, and they just don't have the words. They don't know the vocabulary, and it's just like, I think I was listening to Richard Stubbs. I'm not having a go at Richard or anyone like that, but just people who are of that caliber, who are just technical, they don't even know where the play button is on a CD player, and they're talking about this technology. It's just absolutely hilarious. Even the guys in Adelaide that I do work with over there, I love them. They're great, but they just that's why I guess we do radio, really, isn't it? So. Yes. But anyway, MySpace, another interesting statistic, had 125 million users aged 15 and older, nearly half of them in the United States. So, that's
kind of figures.
Yeah. I think the 15-year-olds are heading towards Twitter, because the other thing you got to mention is Twitter is an SMS-based system. It's designed, except for here in Australia, Twitter is really targeted at mobile devices, so you can follow when it comes through.
Yes.
And we're missing that in this country, really missing that.
Yep.
Because that'd be fantastic. So,
bring it back, Twitter.
Absolutely. So of course, there was a big Rupert Murdoch when he bought MySpace. He paid too much money for it. He acquired it for $580 million in 2005, and he's not quite worth that today. And I don't think he's made that in advertising.
No.
So maybe it wasn't one of Rupert's more wise choices. But then again, I do support Rupert. He is a believer of the internet. And you look at where newspapers are these days. Have you been to a newspaper site online? You get everything. In fact, it'll appear online before it actually appears in print. Now, that goes against the grain of a lot of publishers, doesn't it?
You'd think so.
You've got the ability to go and look at video on these web pages.
Yep.
So, it's taking over the channel of broadcasting, really, isn't it? No wonder we get bombarded with advertising on those things.
It's interesting what's happening to newspapers. It definitely is a changing world in the way newspapers are used. But I wonder if newspapers are really on the way out, or if they're just going to change into something slightly
different.
They'll
morph, I reckon.
Like radio morphed when television came along.
Yeah, it didn't die altogether like people were suggesting. It just took on a different form.
And you look at what the internet is now. You look at Twitter for what Twitter is, and that is it's a real-time search engine in a lot of respects. What's happening in the world right now? Michael Jackson, Rove, or whatever it is you might be looking at, the Iran incidents and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, in a way, it's an anti-newspaper. A newspaper tells you what you ought to know is going on in the world, whereas Twitter tells you what everyone else is talking about.
So, but I think there is a place for newspapers. Like, even the other day, I caught the train out of town last Friday, and I was this MX paper, which is a Melbourne-centric city newspaper, was free and thrust in my hand.
Free newspaper that's distributed on the public transport network,
And I chose to read that than play on Twitter on the way home in the train, which I thought was, it's news.
Nostalgic for the printed word.
But if you look at that, the benefit of something that's tangible and you can put on the table in front of you is good. You can draw on it. You can circle things if you're interested in bits and pieces, or you can give it to the kids to cut up and use in the pictures.
Like, read the quiz and do the crosswords and the Sudokus and all
that's it. Whereas online, you actually don't get a crossword. You just get the story that you're interested in, and you don't get all the other, you know, you go to the front page and you get the odd spot, and you go to the back page and you get the sport, and you get a bit of weather and all that sort of stuff. You have to think about it online
it's
these days.
It's a different experience, isn't it? Yeah.
So, no, I think there is still life left in the old newspaper.
Good. Yet. Good.
So, anyway, in other interesting news this week, I thought was really funny. A virtual chalk is what parking inspectors are now starting to use to mark your tyres.
Oh.
And I'm sure they do in our local area, let me tell you.
Oh, there's a fella around the corner from our place here, where we're broadcasting from, that I know each evening in this supermarket car park, which is council controlled, is out there with his little PDA, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Recording regos and issuing tickets and all that sort of stuff.
So I've seen them zap rego tickets on the front of your, like, it's like they read a barcode or something like that on the front of your vehicle. And then they come back and they do it again. And they go, oh, you've been here a bit too long. And press the next green button, it gives you a ticket.
Instead of chalking the tyre, they just read in your rego number.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not 100% sure that that's what they do, but I've seen certain, like, you know, you can, well, things don't add up when you get tickets at times. And the only thing you can do, like, you know, you look for chalk, there's no chalk. You move back, you drive around the block, you come back and park in the same spot, and they still get you.
Mm.
And I suspect that that's the technology. Anyway, this came to news. Parking offenders beware. A drive-by spy camera, which electronically scans the position of parked cars, is being trialled in Australia. It can automatically detect 5 times the number of vehicles in the same area as one parking patrolling officer on foot. The technology is only in its trial phase here, but the local government association's president, Jania McAfee, says councillors are interested in the idea. Of course they would be. Think of the revenue you'll get off that. A parking enforcement group, Tenix Solutions, is also trialling technology called Auto Chalk. And it uses a digital imaging, laser, and GPS to electronically chalk parked cars and detect overstayers. So what chance do you have now? You can't.
Absolutely none.
You can't roll back, you know, half a tyre length to hide the chalk mark. You've actually got to physically move the car.
But now, but more importantly, if you've lost your car, then this is a really good way of finding it again, because it, previously, obviously, parking inspectors
something
just
in
chalks,
a previous life, you're like, not telling us?
The council, stuff. The council probably know where it is.
But they now know the registration number of the cars parked in their car spaces.
Hmm. Wonder if they'd tell you.
Privacy.
I can't tell you where your own car is.
I don't know that the registration number's a privacy issue, because their registration plate actually is a property of the Victorian government. So
there are websites where you can actually go and put your rego in, and it tells you nearly everything except the car owner's name, which is, yeah, maybe you're right.
Mm.
But is this where we're going for electronic infringement notices? Next, you'll...
Yeah, I remember a while back we had a thing about parking spaces that had built-in electronics that would notify the parking inspector by radio or by SMS or something to that you'd overstayed in the spot, and the parking inspector would come around. So the intelligence was built into the space.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? I remember that.
Yeah. So
bury things under the park. So but under the yeah.
If CityLink and other private road companies that have e-tags and other things to bill you on a toll road and are able to access your information to send you a bill when you haven't got an e-tag and you've driven down their road, surely a council, which is part of the government mechanism, could do the same thing. So we've got your registration number, you've overstayed.
But they'll have to set up those massive gantries over every parking space.
Well, no, they don't need to, because they're just going to photograph as they drive past.
Oh, okay.
5 times the revenue.
Parking camera now.
I just think Boorundara, Stonington, all those cars. Like, where do we get it? Where do we get it? So, all right. So watch out. If you see a Google mobile drive up and down the street, it may not be a Google car taking
you. Yeah, it might be the council doing the parking round.
Absolutely.
There was a town in England where they bailed up the Google car and wouldn't let it drive through their town. I reckon
a little black one, I remember that.
I reckon there's going to be, you know, revolts, people blocking the council car from going down the street. What do you reckon?
Well, you know, the thing that annoys me about parking, now that we've mentioned it, is when you park and there's no one else around you for miles, you're in a 2-hour spot or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, there's the whole street's empty, but yet you still manage to get a ticket because you overstayed your 2 hours. Now, I thought the purpose of parking inspectors was to give you a fair go, or give the next person a go. You spayed 2 hours, off you go, let someone else park in your spot.
Silly.
It's not, apparently.
It's about raising money.
Yeah. Anyway. It's like taxes. It's like photographic gantries on tollways and things like that.
And when I find myself in that, you're the one car parked and the whole row is empty, My first question is this a clear way? Am I supposed to be parking here?
Well, that's the other thing too.
It's usually a bit of a clue that something's wrong.
Clear way, yeah, exactly right. Let's talk a little bit more tech. Last one for the evening, I think we might squeeze this one in.
Yeah.
What am I trying to say? Sony is considering a mobile... let me start again. Sony is rumoured to start work on a PlayStation portable phone.
Mm. Oh.
See, you look what iPhone's doing, as JD was alluding to this evening. You know, no longer do we sit there. We entertain ourselves on these devices. So Sony's going to call this thing the Nikkei, apparently.
Is this a phone with a game built into it, or is this a game with a phone built into it?
I think it's the PlayStation Portable
with a
being
phone
turned
built
into
it.
A phone. Yeah.
Okay.
Sony is considering a mobile game hybrid in a bid to get better competition with Apple's iPhone. Sony plans to set up a project team as early as July to develop a new product that combines functions of its portable game player and Sony Ericsson's mobile phones. The company unveiled the PlayStation, or the PSP, Go, a more portable version of its gaming device, at the E3 Expo last month. So maybe there's prototypes out there already.
Mm.
But then again, it's got to be a good idea. Anything to compete with others keeps prices down, keeps
interest
up, really, doesn't it?
If you're in the middle of playing a game and suddenly the game rings and someone wants to talk to you, they're interrupting your game.
You want to know what's more annoying? It's when you're sending a text and someone rings you whilst you're texting. That happened to me. It happened to my wife last night, actually. We were sitting in there texting away and the phone rang. And she nearly threw the thing at me. Why is doing that? Someone's ringing you, dear.
Did you ring her just to...
No. One of the things I've done lately, which is a really good... With Telstra, you can actually SMS a fixed line in Australia. Did you know you could do that?
Yeah.
So what you can do is, if you want to really annoy your spouse, is you get your Telstra handset and you can send an SMS to the Telstra landline, and then she has to physically go and retrieve the message. And yeah, anyway, it worked well at our house. That was got a good laugh anyway.
Very
hey,
good.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Odd Spot Gadget and Website of the Week.
Suffering Suck Attack. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Let's face it, Telstra has a huge PR problem.
It's called the Integrated Public Number Database.
Hopefully that's not what they're talking about.
No.
Do you block them, do you?
I do.
Yeah, this is what happened, yeah.
This is what happens.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yep.
Good use of technology.
Adam, you're too far gone to be saved now.
Entertaining.
How can you work in IT and not drink coffee?
Informative.
Boffiny, techie, propellerhead, geeky.
Independent.
The SMS is not an on-time delivery system.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And if you get Inga from Sweden showing her wares.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. Oh, yeah.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Okay, what else can you do with your iPhone? Is the screen not big enough for you? Well, if not, you can get the Mealy Pro iPhone Projector. This adaptive plugs into your iPhone, projects up to a 70-inch projection on the wall.
Just what you need, really, isn't it?
Fantastic.
Your iPhone?
Now, given that it's only 640 by 480, the resolution's not going to be great, that great at 70-inch screen. But anyway, you could do it for a smaller version if you wished. The details aren't all that available. But
it's a wish list, isn't it? I don't think it's hit the...
They're estimating the price at just under $300. So
oh, wow.
They've got a bit of an idea of price.
That's not too bad, is it?
So what do? You sit your iPhone in a device.
Sit your iPhone in it. It sits like a cradle.
Yeah.
It's got a flip-open section that's got your projector on it. Now, it looks like it will only project in portrait mode.
Okay.
I can't quite see what you do for landscape. It's a bit bizarre if you have a look at the picture. But anyway, the Mealy Pro iPhone projector, just under $300, coming to a shop near you soon.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Now, here's a website. If you're a developer of websites or PowerPoint presentations or anything, and you need those silly little things called icons that come in all sorts, you know, like faceless heads and trees and forests and disk drives and floppy disks and... I remember them? Floppy disks.
Yep.
And CD, all those sort of things. There's a really good site, which I came across recently, which I've actually... nicked as much as I can off. It's all free. It's called Iconaholics. And there's people there that have nothing better to do than to make icons. Like if you want OS X icons, or Windows icons, or Ubuntu icons, any type of icon that you could possibly want. And they're big ones. They're not the little, itty-bitty 16 by 16 or 32 by 32 pixel icons.
Okay.
They're big suckers, which you can put on buttons on applications and on websites for downloads and all that sort of stuff. You know, those sort of things that you need.
Yep, yep.
Go and try it out. It's called Iconaholic, as you would expect. Iconaholic.com. You don't have to register or do anything like that. They've just got a great collection of little nicky-nacky sort of things that you can download and pop on your websites or anything like that. So a good choice if you're into all that sort of stuff. So go and check it out. Iconaholics for all your icon needs.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Tested by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Apparently, Irish marriages are under threat from cyberspace.
Yeah.
This comes from a Catholic Church marriage care service, and they're claiming that up to 7% of couples say too much time spent on in cyberspace by one partner is a major problem in the marriage.
Really?
Yep.
I think it does good things for our marriage.
So, well, there you go. So, key areas of conflict include internet gambling.
Don't do that.
Infidelity, one partner spending too much time online rather than with their spouse or family. So, beware the danger of spending too much time online might endanger the marriage.
And that's from
an Irish Catholic Church marriage counselling service.
There you go. All right, you've heard it all here tonight on Tech Talk Radio. Anything and everything from Irish marriage consultants through to the iPhone. Everything to do with the eye. Now, just a bit of an update. Dr. Ron hasn't been with us this evening. Hopefully, he will return next week. And for those of you watching Spooks, well, you missed out on that last little bit, didn't you?
Actually, Dr. Ron has been surreptitiously in the chat room.
Oh, he has. I thought that might have been who he was. He has popped up from a computer. Anyway, that's for another story. Don't forget, July the 13th, we've got Lydia Davis, our US correspondent, popping in live into the studio. She's going to join us here. I think Graham, you're away that weekend, so
yep.
Anyway, that's life. So
I'll be listening.
Have
to
a listen. Well, get out, we get in, we get out, all that sort of stuff. So make sure you tune in to Tech Talk Radio on July the 13th. Something to look forward to, because Lyd's great, and she's been living in Silicon Valley for the last near enough 4 years.
Yeah,
she can tell us the differences between
interesting stories.
Us and them, yeah. So, yeah. And you can ask your questions on the chat like a lot of others have been doing tonight too. It's been fantastic. Thanks everyone for joining us on the chat. Thanks everyone for joining us on Ustream. We've had a few in there tonight, have we, JD?
Let me have a quick count. We were 53 last time I looked.
53 people watching
60.
Us. 60 people viewers watching us on the telly. Mm. Go and watch Spooks, for goodness sakes. All right. Same time next week. It's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.